Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Before we jump into the heart of our program here, I'm going to remind you that the University of, Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the University of Maryland Heart Center, where expert cardiologists, cardiac surgeons, nurses, and support staff have built a nationally recognized program focused on prevention, treatment, and rehabilitation. For a virtual tour of the Heart Center, www.umm.edu/heart. And we also want to say, take our time to give condolences today to all of us. So we lost one of our great jazz musicians at 91 years old. Dave Brubeck passed away today. And I interviewed him three times. Tomorrow we're going to bring you some of those interviews that we had with Dave Brubeck, some of his music, because tomorrow is also his birthday. So today he passed. Tomorrow would have been his 92nd birthday. And he was working up to the end. I'll just give you one quick tidbit and then jump into our show, because I always admire this man. He gave us great music, a lot of love. Just an incredible human being. But during the time of segregation, Dave Brubeck was white. Father was a cowboy. Mother was a piano teacher. And he would never play in clubs that were segregated, never stay in a hotel that was segregated, refused to go on stage if he found out they wouldn't allow. He walked off stages when he found out they wouldn't allow folks of color in. So Dave Brubeck, a man who I came to really respect as a human being, get to know a little bit, passed away, 91 years old, and we'll play a little Take Five. Let's do that. Let's, on the way out at the 30, we'll play some Take Five. His most famous piece. But right now, let's jump into our conversation. We are here in the studio with Hassan Giordano, who hosts Reporters Roundtable Talk Show and a columnist with the Baltimore Examiner, and Adam Bednar.
Bednar.
Gotcha, man. Sorry. Editor of the North Baltimore Patch. We're going to talk about A.F. James MacArthur's arrest, who was a blogger, who's been a guest on the show numerous times, who covered a lot of police activity in the streets, and had a five-hour standoff and with the police that was broadcast out across the internet and was taken into custody. And we'll talk more about the exactly happened. I think he was charged with violation of probation, a gun charge. They found a sawed-off shotgun. He was just denied bail. So let's jump into it, gentlemen. And you folks out there, 410-319-8888, join us. We'll come to these calls coming in immediately. But let me start with Hassan Giordano.
Well, Mark, I mean, you hit it in a nutshell. I think Jimmy was surprised by the violation. It was an unsupervised probation before judgment case from 2009. He was shocked, as Adam brought up before off air when we were just talking about the violation in itself. He was supposed to go to court, never got the court date in the mail apparently, but knew about the warrant days ahead of time. Then when the warrant apprehension task force came to serve that warrant that evening, he at first, reached out to several people and called us and said, look, I want video cameras here, because he feared for his safety. He's had past run-ins with the law that I've known, that he has said this numerous times. And this is one of the things that hasn't been said that I think needs to be brought up. He brought these charges up before about how police handled him, threw him in Walter P. Carter Center for weeks at a time with nobody knowing, to certain council people that I know personally, because he raised it to me as well and others, that nobody actually addressed. And so he was worried that as of incidents passed, that they would beat on him and send him places that nobody knew. So he wanted cameras there. He wanted people to witness it. They then locked it down, brought SWAT. And then my thing is, how Lieutenant Yerg then was negotiated. Jimmy called downtown. He's on air live. He calls to the police station, has them patch him in to Lieutenant Yerg, who was outside his house. I don't understand how tactical force, once they knew they're on air, would just shut the negotiations down instead of, it almost seemed like the lieutenant himself was intrigued by being on air and knowing it was going national, and he allowed this conversation to continue for like an hour and a half more. I just didn't understand that strategy. I think both were at fault to some degree, but in the same sense, I think it brings a bigger highlight on the city police. People don't feel safe. It's becoming a police in state. We have state troopers rolling around our cities, and I just don't think that the people, even in that community, I think Adam was down there that night as well, people just don't feel safe.
You were there?
No, I wasn't there. patch editor, Nina Davis, who was on call, who I was just a tossing pen, she had gone down to the scene for me and was there. I was running the command center listening to what, you know, James had to say on his radio broadcast through the internet and trying to coordinate the different parts for my apartment. But you brought up why the police at that point probably didn't want to cut it off. I'm not sure why. I've not had any kind of conversations with them as to why not. But I would seem that it would behoove them not to cut him off at that point to generate more conspiracy theories. Because if he goes quiet in the middle of that broadcast, a lot of people that are now watching that, listening to that, are going to kind of freak out and go, oh, did they go in there? Did they go in there? Is he okay? And probably cause a situation to escalate more than doing what they did. And, you know, we can debate whether or not Lieutenant Jurg did the right thing and whether he let the attention maybe go on too long. But at the end of the day, he did walk out. No one was hurt. And I think that was probably the best outcome for it, especially when it could have gone very south very quickly. Especially, I think they were on edge, too, because James had been putting some stuff out there on social media, Twitter and Facebook. Whether or not they should have been following that or not is a different thing, but I think that some of the stuff that they saw may have made them a little bit antsy heading into that situation.
When did the police start monitoring people's social media? I mean, we're friends, Mark. What's the last post I put on Facebook or Twitter? You couldn't tell me. So how's the police now? Are they monitoring? Is he that much of a threat that they're monitoring his social media? Or did they just make this up and then after they found out, after they went on air and found out about these threats when they went on air, did they then make that as an excuse?
But why would they? I mean, the question is why did they monitor it? They did monitor it. And he did say things like, anyone trying to capture me, you're going to have to kill me before I kill you. I'm a nice guy. I'm a bad, bad man. Dangerous us, so don't try. Don't think it's idle chatter. Step closer. Try to tread on me, see what happens, see who's right and who's wrong, see who knows how to fight. And finally, let's be clear. There's some peeps who stepped on my toes before. Guess what? They're no longer here. So who's next? Serious.
And that they are serious, Alec. I mean, Mark, my friend, she used to be Baltimore City Police. I understand that's one of the most dangerous jobs you have. And I sympathize with him. I think they took the proper procedures so nobody got hurt, like you said, Adam. But it still begs the question of, how in the world did you know about these things?
Is it about – then we'll open the phones here. What is it about James MacArthur's work that people in power, if that's the case, and the police found so dangerous?
He was, you know, an unfiltered version of what was happening. And he took things from a perspective that I don't know that a lot of people are all that comfortable with. And there's an advocacy side of what he was doing in his journalism, you know, whereas I consider myself more traditional, down the middle journalist, tell both sides, try to see things within perspectives. James saw his mission in a different light. He saw what he was trying to do as to right a wrong, as to expose this, you know, great corruption through what he saw and through his agenda. And I think, I don't know that he was threatened or that anyone in power really felt threatened by that, but he was drawing attention. And I know for a fact that what he was writing was gaining a lot of attention out there from readers or users of his website and his podcast or live streaming, not podcast, excuse me.
And in today's Examiner article, I call him a journalistic activist because that's exactly what he is. A lot of us who are not traditional, including Adam. Adam's more down the middle, but it's still a citizen journalism. And there's other traditional journalists that try to degrade those who do that. You see it in publications. I won't name one here, but you'll see he's a blogger, but he brands himself as a citizen journalist. Well, there's a difference between a blogger and a citizen journalist. One reports the news, the other reports on the news. So it's a difference between just reiterating what somebody else did and creating your own news like Adam does in The Patch and like Jimmy does in the Baltimore Spectator. And I think people felt very threatened because he exposed a lot of the nuances that we don't see on the streets in the city of Baltimore that people know about in the hood, so to speak, but is not spoken about in traditional media outlets.
So, folks, what do you think about Jimmy MacArthur, his arrest? We've learned he's been denied bail. Mm-hmm. There are questions. We have called out to a couple of attorneys. We want to find out, and I don't know the answer. I should have gotten them before in the air, but I don't have them right now, which is the whole question of when he violated probation, if he violated probation. If he was supposed to be off probation, I've read June, I've read September, that he was off probation. But if you're off probation, then how do you violate probation? or does it always stand that way if it has to do with a gun charge? I don't know the answer to any of those things. We want to find those out. But he's been denied bail, and we'll see what that means, how that, how that plays out. Who can go see him is another question. We're trying to get him to see him, and we hope to get to see him before the next couple of broadcasts that we do. We want to see his man before we go to the phones?
No.
4103.
He's at Central Book. You're not going to be able to see him until they transfer him over to the jail part.
That's so. It's a new rule in the new rule they have at City Jail.
Right.
The detention center, which is a really absurd rule.
It is.
Which is you cannot see anybody. You're not allowed visitors. Now, that makes no sense. For the first, you're there for a month. You're waiting to be transferred. You're waiting for a trial. You're not allowed to see visitors. That's a, that is an arbitrary rule that was created within the detention center. That has no real precedence and no and makes no sense.
And it's, I mean, it's paid phone. It's collect calls. So a lot of people have blocks, can't accept the collect. So your family might not know where you are for at least a month, if not more. And I think that's part of the reporting that Jimmy was doing that they just didn't like. It was issues like that that need to be addressed.
410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this? Oscar in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Hi, Oscar. Welcome.
Come on, people. Come on. Number one, you asked a question, was he that dangerous? The very fact that he had a sawed-off shotgun is prima facie evidence that he's that dangerous. That's a federal offense. I don't know if you know it or not. You can't saw a shotgun off. Can't do that. Why did he have a sawed-off shotgun? And when did it become fashionable? If you're a certain person, you got notoriety that the police have to negotiate with you if they have a warrant for you. If they have a warrant and you think the warrant is not valid, you give yourself up, you go to court, and settle the day. You don't get on radio and television, all this, right, I'm not coming out and I'm a bad man. Look, you know, I was in that unit, tactical. I mean, when they first started that unit, you know, he's lucky back in them days. No, he barricade himself for 4 or 5 hours, and he'd like they ain't shoot a percussion grenade in there and tear gas and go in there shooting. I mean, come on, man, with this foolishness. He's not exposing anything to the police. And dear Damo, you asked why they monitoring the social media? Mm-hmm. Because this is the time we live in. And the good thing they were monitoring, mm-hmm. So they found out that this man was talking about police.
And that's what I was saying. Oscar, would you have negotiated and stayed on the line, or would you have just said, look, you got 15 minutes to come out, or we're coming in?
I wouldn't give him 15 minutes. I wouldn't have negotiated not 5 minutes. Right. We have a warrant for your arrest, a legal warrant signed by a judge. Come out now.
And that was the point I was making. A lot of times they don't do that.
Well, right? I know, and I think they did it because this guy. And because of the kind of publicity he get now, people are saying, well, this is some kind of conspiracy. They got to do this. And what was he on probation for in the first place?
A gun charge.
Okay. Now, when you on the charge, they said, we got a warrant. They're going to tell TAC. We got a guy to have a warrant on it. We got a warrant for him on a gun charge, and he might be armed. I'm sure that's what they told him, mm-hmm. And that's why they called TAC up there. And that's why I heard some people say, why do they send TAC? Well, because that's what TAC did. That's their job.
But I think one thing we're missing kind of a point on here,
Adam,
is the mindset of where James was at this point. Now, you and I, you know, police come to our doorstep. I know what I am, and I'm going to cooperate any way I possibly can. Now, James, you know, has alleged he's had some real problems with the police in the past. So, you know, if someone's having that fear already and that they know there's been some bad interactions to begin with, he's probably not going to be real anxious to go out there. And if he fears, and like he said, he did say he was afraid, whether those fears were justified or not. He said he was afraid, and he was on Twitter and trying to get people in and around to see what happened. And that was what I took away from the primary point of his negotiations, is he wanted people to get there to be able to see what happened to him. Now, I don't know that his fears were justified or not, but his perspective was that he was scared.
He doesn't have that luxury. A lot of people are afraid to be locked up. So you got to want, you come out, you give yourself up peacefully, and there won't be no trouble. You can't say, I'm staying in, we're going to negotiate this. I wouldn't negotiate one for 5 minutes.
Oscar, we appreciate the call. Always good to hear from you and bring that former officer perspective into this. And it's the National Firearms Act, by the way, just looking it up, that makes it illegal for a private citizen to possess a sawed-off shotgun. Period.
And he could have avoided all. I mean, and I talked to him. Look, he knew he had that violation days before. He could have easily called his attorney, whoever that may be, because he said it was Delegate Carter. She emphatically denied that to me.
Yes.
But either way, you could have called your attorney, called your bail bondsman, said, look, this is what I have. I want to turn myself in. And then they would have arranged that situation for you to go down, turn yourself in a central book and get your bail paid, whatever, if it was a bail at the time, and taken away. So, again, fault lies on both ends.
Yeah, well, I mean, the situation's ridiculous. You know you're in trouble. You know the police are looking for you for days. They've been contacting you out there. And you have the sawed-off shotgun in the house where you have the standoff in. That's just not thinking. Plain and simple, not thinking.
Well, I'm going to read some emails that have come in about this on Facebook, I mean to say. But let me go back to the phones. And Ernest, you're on the air.
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening, Ernest.
Good to you and your guests.
Good evening.
Now, I've heard Jimmy, they called him Jimmy the Bodyguard and all that on some stations.
Right.
And people tried to say he's a journalist and he knew about the police. He's an expert. And listening to him, I knew he wasn't a police. It's certain things, it's certain words the police use, retired or working, in this city, that I knew he was not a police officer. And then when I would ask him and question him, I say, have you ever been a police anywhere? And he would always say, what's the point? The point is that he was putting himself off like he was an expert on police work. And not only that, he was also had a scanner in his car or something, or in that cab he was driving, and every time it's some kind of major problem, a shooting, a homicide, when the police get the call, he's there first. And then he's reporting how long it took the police to get there and all that. So, hey, like Oscar said, gas right away, a little gas grenade about the size of a lemon, he would have been out there. Now, just think what any sane person would do. If you knew the police had a warrant for you, you would contact your lawyer. He knows plenty of lawyers. They come on one of the stations he appear on, three of them at least. Contact the lawyer, say, or get the lawyer of your choice, and say, I think they have a warrant on me. I've been bugging the police, and I want you to go with me while I turn myself in. Like Oscar said, he's lucky that he didn't get shot. The fact that he had that shotgun in there, if he'd have been close to it, he could have been shot. People want to go home at night. Now, I don't know if you remember this, Mark. You remember when the lieutenant, they had a guy that was supposed to have been crazy in Northeast Baltimore, and the lieutenant was supposed to get off from work, getting ready to retire, and he went to the door. The man shot through the door with a sawed-off shotgun.
Yeah.
Killed the, huh?
Yes, I do.
What did you say?
I said, yes, I do.
Yeah, well, I couldn't hear you on the side.
You said, do I remember? I said, yes, I do remember.
Oh, yeah. And he was killed, a hell of a nice guy, was killed immediately and left his wife and his children. Nobody wants to see that. We want to see police go home at night, and we also want to see the suspects.
We somehow lost Ernest. Let me go to the phones here and get this attorney on in a second. 410-319-8888. Local attorney, noted attorney Cheryl Wood joins us by phone. Cheryl, good to have you on the air with us once again. How are you, Cheryl?
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks so much for doing this at the last second. We deeply appreciate it.
No problem.
So tell me, I mean, I know that you haven't had a chance to really look at this deeply, but I'm just curious. One of the questions that people seem to have is if this was a case where somebody was on probation for a gun charge, but the probation allegedly ended September or June, nobody's quite sure, how could he violate something? What do we know about why they were even seeking him?
We don't know much, Mark. I think that he had violated probation at some point, and he ended up with a warrant that has been outstanding for two or three years now, and they were executing the warrant. They do take – now, it's just interesting how they chose to execute a warrant against him when he had been talking about the police, you know, on Twitter, so it's kind of interesting, and we don't know how that happens. But if you have an outstanding warrant, then your probation cannot end successfully while that warrant is outstanding, even if your date comes up that it's supposed to end.
Now, with the probation before judgment, Madam Counselor, how exactly, because I know I've experienced it, a lot of people experience probation before judgment. It's something that can be wiped from your record once you've successfully completed it. He says that it was a court date that was missed. Is there anything that you could think of probation before judgment that he may have violated and then had to go to court for it, or that's just too much speculation without the proper information?
Well, it says that he was wanted for a violation of probation that was regarding these gun charges that were filed back in 2009. Now, what he did to violate probation, he may have been missing a court date, obviously. He may have had a court date for something, and he missed it. We don't know. I don't know right now from the accounts that I've read what that court date was for, but the point is he did have an outstanding warrant, and even if his probation was scheduled to end in September or whatever, it can't end until that warrant is taken care of. It just can't.
But so with a prior gun charge, he had one in 2002. With this one in 2009, isn't probation before judgment a very lenient sentence for a gun charge?
So. You would think so. And, of course, we need to look at this a little closer. And I hope, Mark, I'll be able to come back.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Talk about it once we actually know something more. I mean, the news accounts really aren't saying, but I don't know how, and that's going to be an interesting thing. I think everyone is, once again, talking about guns, given the recent suicide murder that happened with the former, with the NFL player.
Right.
I mean, once again, we're talking about guns and access to guns and what that causes. I'm also interested to know how they found the sawed-off shotgun in his house. I mean, my understanding is they had an arrest warrant, not a search warrant. And unless it was in plain view, I don't know how they found that. Unless they asked him to search his house and he said, okay, I don't know.
We will have you back on soon, Cheryl, because it's been too long, and we miss having you on the air with us.
Well, I would love to, and it's great to talk to you, Mark, and Hassan as well.
Take care. Thanks so much, Cheryl.
All right,
so Cheryl Wood, noted attorney, joins us just for a few minutes so we can answer some of these questions. Adam, you have a thought before we have to get another caller in here before we have to make room for our next guests?
Well, just real quickly, as I wanted to clarify, is a lot of people have been upset and have made a question about whether or not the tactical unit should have been called in to deal with this situation. And I just want to say, I think that they probably made the smart decision in bringing the tactical unit in to the situation, just because we had mentioned before, the comments that he had made on Twitter. I know, James, I don't think he was a violent person from my interactions with him, but you're talking about the police. They see these things on Twitter. They have to go into a strange situation to get someone that has gun charges in his background. Better safe than sorry, and better safe that everyone goes home that night.
I think there are a lot of questions that need to be answered, only because of the personality of Jimmy MacArthur was in terms of what he was doing in the street and what he was trying to expose, whether he effectively did or not. It's not the issue, that the fact that he did that stuff that was antagonistic to some people in authority. Did that have something to do with the way this was handled? Did he make some mistakes? Should he be the kind of person who stays incarcerated for this amount of time? Is he really that dangerous? I mean, before this, he had those shots of him on his Facebook page, pumping up, talking about that notwithstanding, I think that there's still a lot of unanswered pieces here, and I think that there are so many people who are incarcerated for so long, who should not be in prison and should not be in jail. Then when somebody you know who's been out there doing this kind of work as a blogger or more, it's time to ask some more serious questions, which is why we started this conversation tonight and we'll continue this conversation. And I want to thank our two guests for coming in the last minute here, Hassan Giordano.
Always a pleasure, man. Thanks.
Good to always have your sidekick here.
Yeah.
Yes, Toman Hassan's son. Always in the studio.
I heard this, not just you. I heard everybody I was talking to.
That's good. That's why you're here. Got the headphones on. You're next.
He's going to take your job, Mark.
He might. And Adam Bednar, who was with us, editor of the North Baltimore Patch. Good to have you with us as well. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Had a great time.
I'll have you back. Folks, we'll take a brief break. Before we go there, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at MDHOPE, That's mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. Remembering Dave Rubeck, we'll be back in just a few minutes. Don't go away. We have more show to come. Thank you.